In the heart of Bloomsbury.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com. And today's programme features the Leverhulme Trust Artists in Residency programme. We have four guests this week. Orlando Harrison, musician and sound artist. Hannah Thompson, a classically trained musician and currently artist in residence at Senate House Library. Joe Banks, artist and researcher, founder of Disinformation. And Dr. Nick Barrett, associate director of collections and engagement at Senate House Library, who is also a presenter and reviewer and a commentator on history. So, good afternoon to you all. We've started with a piece by Orlando Harrison, which sounds like it was actually, or is, recorded in the Senate House Library.
Well, it's actually based on recordings done by Hannah. One of the first things she did, I believe, when she took up her residency was to go around the very large building at, in Bloomsbury, Senate House Library, which is a very beautiful and quite strange and labyrinthine building. Almost, someone said, a friend of mine who works there said it's a bit like Gormenghast.
Can we just a brief bit of history? It used to be called the Ministry of Truth. Is this right?
There's a bit of truth in that, yes. It was used by the Ministry of Information during the Second World War. It was their base. So when it was first built, it had this incredible new use. Uh-huh. So, yeah, there is a bit of truth. And in many ways, it's the inspiration for Orwell's Ministry of Truth. So.
Is it? What, the architectural, just the facade of it? Or
did no, they, so we've actually got a room 101 in the building as well. Yeah, I've got great plans to turn that into a space, perhaps not with rats in cages, when we do an Orwell exhibition in a few years' time.
But, oh, right. Yeah. Oh, really? So you, Nick, you are, I mean, I hesitate. You're not exactly the curator as such? You are the...
I look after the collection, so I have responsibility for spending money, which is always a great job, on bringing in new research material, plus also unique, rare and amazing books, artefacts, archives, that sort of thing. Uh-huh. But also, the other half of my job, the engagement bit, is telling people about it. For me, it's all about telling stories, which is why we were so pleased to welcome Hannah and everybody else into the library as an artist in residence. It's one of the more imaginative ways that we can bring our collections to life.
Right. And Hannah is the present artist in residence. What does that actually involve? How are you situated in the library, and how does that not impinge on the readers, as it were?
Well, I'm based in a glass office in the membership hall, which is quite interesting because walking around a library with recording equipment, especially with all the Orwellian links with Senate House, going around sort of furtively recording. It's rather nice to be in a space which is completely glass and transparent. Uh-huh. So there's sort of strange...
So is this a specially constructed sort of booth or something?
No, it was, I think, originally designed to be a shop to sell stuff from the library. And yep. So it says the shop on the top. And I was very tempted to bring in an ATM and hack it into some audio device. But yep. it wasn't quite as... it wouldn't have been quite as interesting as I'd first thought. And I don't really want to have an ATM in my work.
So how long are you there for?
I'm there till November.
Right.
It's been a real luxury. Yeah. Started in February, so 10 months.
And then it's Orlando Harrison, and then Joe Banks. Possibly.
Maybe. We hopefully. Don't know.
Yes. Hopefully. Hopefully. Okay. And how long does this project intend to be, how long is it going to go on for?
Well, we'd love to have a range of artists in residence to tell stories about the library. This particular part is funded by the Leverhulme Trust, which has allowed us to bring Hannah in and make a part of the working library, hence handing over the shop, turning it into a workshop. I love walking past because instead of being a sterile place, it's this amazing creative environment. And when Hannah's residency finishes, we want to support our exhibitions, which have traditionally been very bookish, as you'd imagine, mm-hmm. and explore some of the content of our collections. We have an amazing collection of radical material, pamphlets, process songs. We want to bring them to life in a very different way, which is why it's great that Orlando can come in. And we'd love to work with Joe as well. So there you go. I've said it on air. You can't get around it now.
In fact, interestingly, I work in a bookshop, and one of our regular customers, in fact, he's a character who I've seen for a long time, years and years and years. He's always at the front of the queue at book fairs. And it was only after like 2 or 3 years of seeing him and chatting to him that I found out that his name is Ron Heisler. And he buys up political pamphlets. He goes round and round and round the bookshops, round and round the book fairs, buying up political pamphlets. And eventually, by getting into conversation with him, I found that he donated something like 40,000 political pamphlets to Senate House Library. And I think that Orlando is actually intending to work with this collection, aren't you?
That's right. That's part of the Radical Voices exhibition. set up by Jordan Landis, which takes just actually a very small sample of the huge repository of radical speeches, pamphlets, recordings, and Ron's collection in particular is absolutely amazing. I mean, it goes all the way back to the English Civil War.
Mm. Right,
I've got stuff from the Paris Commune.
Wow,
and in aesthetic terms, the artwork on some of these pamphlets is just beautiful.
Yeah,
these incredible bright colours and these very strong images. So I'm really looking forward to diving in there and seeing. I've got no idea what I'm going to do yet.
I was just going to ask you. That was my next question. How is this going to influence what you do?
I don't know. I have been thinking about it. And yeah. One of the things it seems important to do is to somehow dramatise, because you have these pamphlets and this literature is part of a whole network of conversations and arguments, and I'd like to find some way to dramatise that, those conflicts, those arguments, those dialectics.
Right.
There's all these strange little groups, like, there's pacifists and there's the Spartacists, who are a really way out kind of Trotskyist or extreme Trotskyist organisation.
Yeah.
Then you've got the nihilists later on from America, and I don't know, to find some way to somehow dramatise a dialectic
in this thing,
and it's all about the voices. So I'm just going to be trying to collect as many different kinds of voices as I can and somehow put them together.
Right. Yeah.
In many ways, it's fantastic having this alternative approach. Being a research library, and I should point out that we are open to members of the public, but you do have to come in on an exhibition ticket to come in. Usually we serve the members of the university, so students can come in for free, but if you want to join up, you have to pay, which is a real problem, which is why we want to do exhibitions like this. But normally, if we have a collection like Ron Heisler's, we form research projects and it's very academic. By giving complete license across to people like Orlando or Hannah or Joe, it brings a different approach. It's absolutely fantastic watching the creative juices flow, and it stops us having to think about how we would perhaps box these things up and do it in a very straitjacketed way. It's really exciting.
So if a member of the public listens to this programme, is there any, will they be able to go in and see Hannah at work?
Well, yes, there are two ways. The first way is to come in to have a look at the exhibition, and we provide a free day pass to come into the library on the fourth floor of Senate House, and that gives you basic access to the reading room spaces. You can't borrow anything, you can't use the e-resource, but you can have a look around. And then we have membership schemes, which you would unfortunately have to pay for, but we're looking at all of this because we do want more people to use these collections. Right. The special collections, the archives, the unique material, you can come in if you have a valid research reason. And I think all of these are valid research reasons.
Yeah. So this is Senate House,
House
Mallet
Library.
Street, WC1, yes. In the middle of Bloomsbury.
That's right.
Behind the British Museum.
Well, the British Museum is behind us, but yes.
Okay. Hannah, how are you doing over there? You're going to do a live set at some point, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Involving what?
Well, because I'm in a radio studio, I'm not going to worry about using a MIDI controller because no one can see it anymore.
Right.
I'm just bringing up my second bit of software, which is a granular sampler on SuperGlider, and I've got the rest of the mix, which is ready and waiting.
Okay.
Just got to bring out my...
And does this relate to what you're doing in the library, or is
this
an entirely separate piece?
No, it's... I started off by working outwards, inwards, so from the outside inwards. So I had we're picking up environmental sounds and going around with a stereo field recorder. And so it's a very, very noisy building. It's got lots of cavities, and because it's listed, all its previous functionality remains, and then it also has the new infrastructures built within it. So you land up with quite a strange set of things that appear to be that aren't actually there, and then things that are, and then spaces in between. So you have a weird alcove, and you're just saying, why on earth is this an alcove? And it's sort of almost slipped between the two setups because everything's preserved.
Right.
And so I thought if I go around doing the recording the sounds of the building, I could gradually get to know people and then start to then discover the sort of narratives within the building and meet the people and
okay. I was just going to say, so there is a sort of human element to this.
Yes.
I mean, you actually use the people that you might encounter in the building? Or?
Yes. Well, there's one other part of it is that because I was there for 10 months, I felt that as well as pursuing a central project, that it was important to support the institution. Hmm. So where they had the Shakespeare exhibition, I provided sound for that, which was fantastic because it was a great way for me to meet the library staff. Because we were recording, the idea was recording the voices of the people who so often aren't heard. So people shelving books, etc.
Oh, yeah.
And recording their favourite Shakespeare quotation.
Right.
And then playing the back with motion-activated audio devices in the lifts and in the exhibition space.
Wow. Okay.
It transformed what we wanted to do with Shakespeare. It was fantastic because you installed some of this in the lifts. And the first time... as people came in, what's going on? Where's this noise coming from? And then they'd stop and they'd listen. And they came out talking about it and wanting to go and explore the exhibition a lot more. It brought it to life. And it was great that staff could get involved as well, not just the library, but across the university. I got to call one of my staff the Whore of Venice in a particular passage from Othello, which was, I'd say, one of my highlights, but it's something I would never normally do in real life. So it was a very playful way to bring everyone together. But it's great. And we want to make sure that it's kept for posterity on the microsite that we've created as well. So it was a really imaginative thing that Hannah brought to the table.
Hmm. And Joe, what's your planned input? Have you been considering?
Excuse me. I mean, there's been some...
I was just interrupting. One of the engineers here seemed to be quite impressed when you came in and I said he saw a CD that you've got, which is Disinformation.
Yeah.
And you are part of Disinformation. He seemed to be quite surprised that it is indeed you.
I think he said he liked it, right? What's his name? Sorry.
He's George.
George. Yeah, we sort of came into the studio and I've been asked to bring some extra material in addition to something else we might refer to, in case we need to play it. And it's this CD called Sense, Data and Perception, that Disinformation CD from 2005, I think. And George said, oh, yeah. I really like that. That's a really great CD.
Yeah.
I was like, you're too young to know about stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm disinformation.
So mention of Bruce Gilbert, was he connected with it?
Or? Not as such. I mean, no. Bruce did some great remixes of the least unfamous disinformation audio sort of sound art thing is probably a sort of performance and track and manifests in different ways, but called National Grid, which involves sounds from amplified mains electricity. It is amplified mains electricity, literally. And Bruce did some fantastic remixes of that for a CD, the compilation CD called Antiphony in 1997.
I think I've got a single by him, actually.
Yeah. Which is Bruce was the...
It's like a little vinyl single.
Wire? Guitarist. But guitarist in wire.
It's like the sounds of a refrigerator, I think, perhaps. Yeah, something
more
like
or less,
that.
Yeah.
Kind of like little crackling and popping.
No. But more like intense, hypnotic drone refrigerator, that kind of refrigerator. Yes. Like, sounds like wom, 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 wom.
Right. Right. Yeah, so what's your plan if should you get the go ahead here from the.
Well,
if you're accepted into this?
I've done something already. Steve Scott got in touch with me over the Rorschach Audio website.
Right.
Let's plug the website, which is a website for my research project, and said, would you like to be involved in this project? Hannah's made all these recordings of Senate House, and would you like to remix them for a performance at the Horse Hospital in Bloomsbury? I did.
Right.
And it was a great evening. Can anybody remember the date?
Yes, on the 2nd of June.
Yeah.
There's the Leverhulme ask for the mid-residency to do a performance. So at Senate House, I did a mid-residency performance in the library. And I gave a selection of samples, which were predominantly to do with there's a redevelopment programme. So there's lots of impact on the library, having to move lots of books. So there's been some sort of disruption. So I kind of recorded that and gave the samples to 6-9 sound artists. And in the evening, they had, and that my event was called Music Concrete of the Building in the Building. Mm. And then at the Horse Hospital, we had. Of the building outside the building, and it was incredible night. It was extraordinary hearing the performances, felt so intensely personal because I'd recorded these sounds and immediately evoked where I was. It's strange how quickly you can identify exactly when you were recording it when you hear it back, and hearing all the different interpretations was really moving.
Particularly good night, in fact, in terms of kind of I've been to dozens and if not hundreds of experimental music events, and it was great. One of the really nice things about doing it at the Horse Hospital was that the engineer Dave actually allowed us to turn off all the lights, not just including the fire,
including
exit,
including the exit,
which is probably not strictly speaking legal, but anyway, normally say, oh, can I? You say to the venue organisers or whatever, can I perform in darkness? And they said no. So that was really good from the point of view of that atmosphere.
Should we play this a part of this now?
Sure.
Joe's piece, which is based a remix of one of Hannah's pieces. Okay. Yeah.
Public Rorschach Audio, Art and Illusion for Sound, published by Disinformation, produced by Strange Attractor Press 2012, non-fiction, psychoacoustics, art theory. Quote, the earliest form of sound recording technology was not a machine but was written language.
So that was a piece by Joe Banks, based on a previous, was it a remix of Hannah Thompson's recordings made in the Senate House Library?
I guess that's the sound of, sort of big hoppers of books being moved around when there were sort of trolleys of books and so forth.
Right.
So,
there's a definite organ tone there, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. That's the sort of audio convolution kind of thing. It's a technique that's used by, effectively it's just a piece of drone music, but it's created using a technique that's used by sort of architectural acoustics consultants to measure the properties of a sort of ambient space for the point of view of...
I thought it was an organ.
Well, it kind of is. It's originally a piece of classical music. Very simple piece of classical music that I wrote myself, but I convolved it, and convolution is a... Yeah, it's actually very easy to do, but in principle, it's a very complicated mathematical sort of thing. I'm not really sure how you process that. That people use for measuring impulse noise in spaces. It's used for sort of ensuring legibility of things like announcements in museums and things like that.
Oh yeah.
So that in places with very live architectural acoustics, very resonant architectural acoustics.
Yeah.
You can ensure the clarity of emergency messages and things like that.
Oh right. Oh, that's interesting. So there is no organ at all.
There was, but it's been convolved.
So it did start with an organ. Somebody actually playing an organ.
It's actually violins. Yeah.
It's violins.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
if you ever see somebody with a gun in an art gallery, it's either, you either need to call the police and run away, or it's an acoustician doing an impulse noise test,
Right.
So have you got an impulse noise gun?
No, they usually use a starting pistol, rather than one with live ammunition.
I thought it was a special kind of gun I want one of those.
So you can pop a balloon?
Yeah. That's the other technique. They burst a big balloon.
I go with the balloon.
You create an impulse noise, and then you use this convolution process to apply that sort of the acoustic. Use the impulse noise to measure the properties of a big public space, potentially somewhere like Senate House, but usually kind of art galleries and museums and things like that. Yeah. Use that, and then you sort of derive the acoustic properties of the space from the echoes, and use the convolution process to apply that. Those characteristics to things like speech recordings to find out how easily members of the public can understand those messages when they're actually in the space.
Right.
Which in certain situations, sort of fire alarm, fire escape type situations, is actually very important. Do that very carefully.
I just wanted to say one of the things I like about that piece is just from it. Getting away from a technical thing, more than just an immediate emotional response, is you're using a lot of these recordings of these trolleys moving these books, and actually that was part of a big move, wasn't it? I think you'll know more about this of a huge number of books from one site to another, which is
We decanted from our basement store thousands of books over the space of several months. This was a big disruption to the library. And Hannah captured that quite well. She didn't capture the swearing in offices, as we found out we had to do it, but that's a different matter entirely. But for me, I mean, the emotional response is that it has somehow captured the soul of the building. And that really goes to the heart of what we were talking about for Orwell. If we're going to do an Orwell exhibition, that is the sort of soundtrack we would use in Room 101. Mm. It really captures the space. We talked about Gormenghast, but there's something far more fundamental about it. It's really amazing to listen to the space that I work in and are very familiar with that soundtrack overlaid. You look at the building in a different way.
Yeah, there's a slight sense of trauma there, and there's a sadness to the music that it's almost like the building itself is mourning something.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I did with those recordings was just kind of go through all the stuff that Hannah supplied, or material that she supplied, and edit out all the kind of human sounds So it's just this kind of never-ending series of kind of clattering trolleys, yeah. You know, just to create a sort of a sense that you were there. What I was trying to do was create the feeling that you were there on your own, to the listener listening to the recording. Mm-hmm. That's what I was aiming for. You know.
Orlando, what's the... You were going to talk. There's the memory hole machine. Is that relate to Orwell? Is that the
memory hole machine? Yeah. Well,
Winston Smith.
Hannah should talk about that.
Ah.
Yes. Just quickly, something about the book moves is that it's an example of the disruption that the library's experienced, and I also found it interesting that the Warburg Institute and from the School of Advanced Studies. There's the residency is Senate House Library and the School of Advanced Studies. So there were people, for example, recording Shakespeare from the library and the institutes within the School of Advanced Studies, one of which is the Warburg Institute. And the fact that the Warburg Institute Library exists in the site due to a book move from Hamburg with Amy Warburg. Right. And then I also thought of during the war, there was another significant movement of books. And that does form a theme in one of the sections of the final performance that I'll be doing in the Being Human Festival at the end of the residency.
Well, then, of course, there was I don't know if this relates at all, but there was the huge move, of course, from the British Museum to the British Library, which must have been the biggest shift of books.
Certainly that I can think of. It's a constant threat. I mean, the disruption of books doesn't help the readers who need access, but also it disturbs the actual material, the fabric of the books themselves. And in many ways, you know, things can sometimes get lost or miscatalogued. People love that familiarity of the space around them, so it's always a challenge. It always feels like you're disturbing the fabric of the collection. Capturing some of that trauma, I think, was a really important part of the process.
But going back to the memory hole,
It's
because of the... I've mentioned already about the recording the physical parts of the building, and the memory hole is essentially a mechanism through which the human and research sort of based activities in the library are captured. And due to the links with Senate House and the used as the Ministry of Information in the war, and I believe that the method in the 1940s of sending information down tubes.
Oh, yes.
Insufficient, yes. So these...
Like they used to have in department stores as well, those little things. It was like a vacuum, wasn't it?
So they had those going down to the basement, and the redacted material from the Ministry of Information would be sent down there to be redacted. And so hence why George Orwell used them, sort of aped them in a... Well, transferred them into a furnace, but for the memory holes.
Right.
So the having the recording the past, and then rather than sending the past down a memory hole to be lost forever, it's collected in an audio archive. And I'm going to be using machine learning, sort of algorithmic composition, to trigger how the content of the audio archive is played back, so that it might be played back in its original form, it might be played back in newspeak or some form of jargon that is, it's the sort of newspeak of today.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, yes.
Fine.
Well, yeah, it was quite interesting that Beveridge Hall, which is one of the ground floor buildings, a beautiful building, but it's quite strange. It's quite dark and moody, and it's kind of dark panelled walls, and this strange uplighting in itself feels kind of Orwellian. And so that's where they used to have, during the Second World War, they used to have the press conferences in that room. It's quite a large commercial hall. But at the same time, in the basement, they had a hall where, which Nick mentioned before, which was would have been before and after a book repository. They actually had a team of sensors.
Oh, really?
Checking and filtering all the for propaganda purposes. Yeah. That's quite a nice image.
The building itself dates from the 1930s, doesn't it?
It does, yes. I mean, foundation stone laid in 1926, but it's been open since 1937.
Was there a library before that
The university library started officially in 1871 and had various locations around, but the whole idea was that this cathedral of learning would be created in the heart of Bloomsbury, and the library was given the fourth floor upwards. So the whole of the tower, it was one of the first skyscrapers in London, and it's still very striking. You'll see it used for films, Batman Returns and all sorts of things like that. So it's quite an iconic landmark, but the tower is where we store the material. Equally, you know, as Hannah was saying, you know, a lot of the alcoves and spaces were designed specifically for card catalogues, which of course we don't have anymore because they're all digitised. Yeah. There were some telephone kiosks, which we simply don't use. So a lot of the internal materials were set up to be ultra futuristic in 1936-7. And of course now we see them as obsolete or echoey spaces.
Yes.
So there's this wonderful sense that you're exploring a building, and once you get out of the main three reading levels, 4, 5, 6, and I suppose a bit of 7, you are into storage space where there are cages and strange bits and pieces of technology which have been left, old Bakelite things. It's an incredible place. It's like a time capsule.
Right. And how does the Leverhulme Trust get involved in this? Where does that come from?
Well, they provide grants for artists in residence across the country. And so you as an institution have to apply to bring in an artist in residence who can provide a completely unique take on your building. It's meant to be about the institution, but in many ways it should be free of the institution's involvement to set the piece, which is, as I said, why it's been fantastic having Hannah come in and imagine our space in a very different way. So we've learnt a lot just by the way she's captured and recorded that space, but also the additional contribution to Shakespeare has been phenomenal. In many ways we used the entire building as our plaything. We put some installation art on the stairs, we recreated Shakespeare's face and overlaid in vinyl all the way up the ceremonial staircase on the ground to first floor, and people would come in and would be absolutely gobsmacked when they saw this wonderful familiar sight transformed. Which is why we wanted it to be a completely immersive experience, putting installation art around the building to show that it's not just about traditional learning or research on books, but it's interpreting a whole wider set of stories.
Right.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest, if you want to know about the genesis of the project. Then,
yes, we were going to mention Andrea.
Andrea Chandler, who's systems librarian, I think. I believe we have a short interview with her.
Yeah, should we play that?
Yeah.
So this is Andrea Chandler, who is again?
She's systems librarian at Senate House.
Okay.
Okay, I am sitting in a little glass room just off the main reception area in Senate House Library, and I'm surrounded by various gadgets and strange arcane bits of machinery, and I'm sitting with Andrew Chandler, who is systems librarian at Senate House Library. Okay, so what's a systems librarian? How is that different from a normal librarian?
Unlike normal librarians, you don't often see me wandering around the shelves. I'm looking after the computer system that drives all of the library functions. So I know all about your finds.
And probably a lot more. So you're in charge of the brain.
That's right.
You're the kind of the Stasi of the library.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I do have to say Senate House Library is the library of the University of London, because we have to mention that.
Okay.
We're very proudly so. So we are the overarching academic library for all of the universities within the University of London package.
Okay. All right. And yes, the reason I'm talking to you is because you are part of a group of people that are responsible for bringing sound artists, visiting sound artists into the library. One of the first things that occurs to me is a library, is a place notoriously that you're not allowed to make any noise whatsoever. So how on earth is this going to work?
When I first arrived here, we were in the middle of the largest building works programme that this building has ever experienced since it was originally built. And we couldn't hear ourselves think in many of the rooms. We just had this sort of, day in, day out punishing industrial noise going on. My first instinct was, Hannah would love this. And my second instinct is, how is this happening in one of the last of the genuinely silent academic libraries? Because most academic libraries have long since given up their rule of silence. So we have these pockets of dead silence in these beautiful high-ceilinged reading rooms with everything going on outside that you could imagine.
Right.
And that sort of the forcefulness of that juxtaposition, number one, made me think of how much Anna would enjoy it, and number two, made me think, well, why don't we have sound everywhere?
Okay, so that's quite ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it was that, it was the industrial noise, ambient industrial noises invading the supposed notional science of the library that made you think this is actually quite an interesting acoustic space.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's certainly true. It's a fascinating building. We're just walking around. Every room seems different, seems to have a different atmosphere, different ambience, different kind of reverb. And Hannah has obviously been playing with that, with the different dynamics in the various rooms. So Hannah's been here for how long?
Since January.
Okay, and sitting in this office, how have people responded to having her here?
I think the initial one response was kind of shock and disbelief that we have so much little free space that we were going to actually have to make space for an artist for a whole year. So there was a certain amount of outrage that, you know, somebody was going to come and, to all intents and purposes, doss around just spying on them for a year and receive money for this while everybody else was working hard. But I think Hannah was such a good choice for the first person because she won us over so quickly. She was so charming and so warm, and she made a point of making friends with everybody when she arrived. Uh-huh. She is also a workaholic, and it's very plain to see that she works very hard.
Right.
And I think that immediately gave people more respect for her, even if they didn't understand artistically what she was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that Hannah and I both asked all of the staff was to speak with Hannah and talk about things that they had heard around the library, because, you know, some people have been here 30 years.
Uh-huh.
So not just things that we could still hear, but historical things that they could hear. And I think that allowed people to start to see the value of documenting what was happening here, especially seeing as we have all these changes going on that are going to change some of the soundscapes forever.
Right. And at some point in the show we'll be playing some pieces based on some of the sounds that Hannah's recorded in the building. Some of those sounds are documenting that change that you talked about.
Yeah.
There's been a big move of a lot of books from one site to another.
That's right. We used to occupy the entire basement with some of the library special collections, and those have now moved off site. So Hannah spent a long time recording that area before all of it was unshelved,
right?
And then the empty space, and presumably the new space when that's been built.
Right. Yeah. I work with those sound files, and it's quite interesting how the sounds from the move, the kind of industrial sounds of lorries, lifts going up and down, stuff like that, it does sound, after the kind of lovely, spooky ambience in the building, it does sound quite violent. It sounds like so that's quite an interesting contrast there.
I think one of the interesting things about the soundscapes here is that the whole building was purpose-built for books, purpose-built for libraries, purpose-built for silence in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some aspects of that that can't be changed, despite the best efforts of the redevelopers.
Right. Well, you say that, but interesting, this main library building is it's clad in Portland stone, isn't it? Which is actually very echoey.
Yeah.
So it actually makes... I'm reminded of a quote by Lacan, who talks about the real, the nature of the real, and he says that the real appears in the way that a cry in the night will make silence appear.
Well, exactly. It enforces silence.
Right.
And the whole notion, the whole kind of 1984 feel of this building is the idea of quiet enforcement.
Right. Quiet enforcement.
That very kind of sort of... I was about to say BBC, but of course I shouldn't say that. But that definitely sort of the benign institution, the government that is caring for you in times of stress.
Right.
You know, you can really feel that kind of energy.
Yes, keep calm and carry on.
Yeah.
Okay, so Hannah's been here for a few months. You're hoping for this to be an ongoing thing with other artists coming and doing different kinds of work.
So that was Orlando Harrison talking to Andrea Chandler. Mm-hmm. And Andrea's position is what again?
The systems librarian. She's in charge of the library's brains, basically.
Okay.
And she knows, as she said, she knows everything about.
Does the library have a brain?
Finds and
it gets stranger and stranger.
It does.
Where is this brain?
It does. But Andrea won't tell me.
No. All right, just to say that you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and we're discussing the Leverhulme Trust Artists in Residence programme with Dr. Nick Barrett, Joe Banks, Hannah Thompson and Orlando Harrison. Where should we go from there?
How are you doing, Hannah?
I'm set up, ready now. But there's also something else that I meant to say when I was describing the installation that I'm building. And that is that anybody can come to Senate House, to the Open Studio on a Wednesday, and can contribute to the memory hole.
Oh, right.
In response to significant things that have happened in the library over the year, or if they are people, so library users, it'll be what books they're reading and what they're studying. If it's research librarians, it's what research they've been doing. And if it's visitors, responding to events through the year that might sort of feed into the residency period. And the way that you can enter your contribution to the memory hole is using a mechanical solenoid tape punch puncher on pink tape. And you type it in, and it punches out in ASCII code. And at the moment, the puncher is in the studio for people to punch in their message. And when the reader comes, the tape can be fed into the reader, and this will be catalogued and entered into the memory hole. And it'll be the catalogue numbers used for the machine learning algorithmic composition. Nice. And we'll also have a bit of fun with these bits of tape, and we'll use them to control the sounds around. So the most important thing is how's the output. This will be converted using text-to-speech software. So once it's in, it'll be come out with voice.
So anyone can do this? Anyone could approach you in the studio?
Yes.
But it has to be connected to the library in some way. The story or whatever it is they have to say should have some connection with a book or something, some experience they've had with the library.
Yeah, they can respond to when they come and meet me and find out about the residency.
Yeah.
And then respond to that, either something they feel inspired to contribute, or they can respond to something that I say. Joe, for example, has already contributed to the memory hole, and it was fantastic because he input the quotation that was in the piece that we heard just now.
Yeah, the punch machine, you know, it's like a sort of tape puncher, so it kind of fires little holes into the sort of red tape or whatever. It's really fun, you know, if you're kind of like a gadget-oriented person like me, it's you know.
Is there a record of who has done it, or does it just disappear into the...
I don't know what they're
goes
doing
into an abyss
with our precious thoughts, you know. No,
in my brain. Yeah.
So it's not recorded as Joe Bank story on such and such a date?
I took the piece of paper home with me as a memento, you know, punch strip, you know.
Yeah.
It's identified by the catalogue number, and then when each contribution is triggered in the playback, the numbers will also be displayed.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it can be anonymous, sort of, but you'll know who you are.
Seems to be a theme emerging around this, doesn't it?
Yeah. All right. Nick, any thoughts? Anything to
Nick hasn't contributed yet.
I know, I was thinking that as you were speaking, that I really ought to get some thoughts down. In many ways, it's almost my first year in the library. I've been here just over a year, and having never worked in the library sector before, I've got some very strong thoughts about Senate House Library in particular, so I'll be sharing those. But I suppose this is really a throw out to all of our artists in residence here about coming up and challenging them to challenge us about how we can help support similar residences. For us, we've got a rolling programme of events. We want to draw on some of the material, but we want people to come up to us and say, wouldn't it be good to do a residency on this particular subject. We're talking about sound, obviously, but it could be other forms. We've got some street artists coming in fairly soon as part of our Utopia Dystopia exhibition that's currently ongoing. You can pick up a theme here of radicalism and, and darkness appearing. Yeah. But we want them to encounter material in the library and then interpret it in a very modern twist. And by creating the artwork, we want to then accession that into our collection. We also look after university artworks. So it's a living dialogue in many ways between the collections and our users, and we want that to be captured in different ways as well.
Are the residencies like an open application thing, or how does it work? How's this? What's the system of how people get to be artists in residence?
Well, this is the first time we've done it, so we're still working on the proposals at the moment. In theory, anyone who wants to come in and engage with us, as long as we've got a fairly good idea of what it is you want to try and do, we'll try and make some space, that's fine. The key thing about this is that it was funded, so it has given a bit more room to breathe and help Hannah out. So we're looking at how we can secure some more funding to have a longer period residency. But to be honest, we'll be very happy to listen to any proposal that's brought to us.
Right. Okay. Hannah, I think maybe we should we do your piece now? What's this called? Does it have a title or?
No, it's Residency Part One.
Fine. And is this, are we playing this off here?
Okay. Oh, shall I just say before you start that it's the sounds of the Senate House, and then the voices recorded during the Shakespeare. I've chosen one of those to use the granular sampling technique. So there's a sort of combination of the physical and the human.
And you're sort of improvising this piece here in the studio now. It's a sort of unique piece.
I'm mixing it live.
Right.
Yes, it is. It is a unique form. Okay. I'm going to go to the next one.
So that was a piece by Hannah Thompson, improvising live in the studio here at Resonance 104.4 FM. You're listening to Wavelength, and today's show featured the Leverhulme Trust Artists in Residence programme with Orlando Harrison, Hannah Thompson, Joe Banks, Dr. Nick Barrett, and the voice of Andrea Chandler. Do these pieces, or will these pieces, have any... will they exist outside of the library? I mean, apart from today's radio broadcast, do you know what I mean? Is there going to be a... Is there a sort of a life after the Memory Hole?
Well, in the Being Human Festival, the Memory Hole will be an installation for the public to engage with it throughout the festival. And then on the 24th of November, I'll be doing a live performance... using ambisonics, so spatial audio. And that's the sort of launch of the Memory Hole playback. Ah. and it'll be in constructed in four sections representing different themes of the residency. I'll be using my violin.
So where does this take place?
In Being Human at Senate House,
The
second floor exhibition space.
Right.
With the spatial audio will be started at 7 o'clock, and then at 7:30 is the live performance that you need to book. It's free, but it's a booking event.
Okay. So how does one find out about this? Where, is there a website or some means of finding out how to attend this event?
Yeah, there's on the Senate House Library website, there's a sound artist blog.
Right.
And there's links there. And there's also directly to Being Human, which has its own website with an event listing, extended event listing. It's quite interesting because the memory hole will be at the bottom of the stairs, and then at the top of the stairs there's an H.G. Wells inspired audio installation.
Okay. Orlando?
I think I should just mention also Colin Homsky, who we didn't have time to. We did record an interview, but we didn't have time to talk to him, but he is doing an event, Salon Voltaire, which is connected with, I think, the 100th anniversary of Dada, and Hannah will be doing stuff there, and as well as a dozen other artists.
I've got Homsky. Is he Homsky or Homsky?
Homsky.
Homsky.
It's Colin J.P. Homsky, music librarian at Senate House, and a composer, conductor and pianist as well.
Yeah, and he'll be hosting this Salon Voltaire. I think it's is it the 21st?
It's 6 o'clock.
Yeah, 6 o'clock.
On the 21st of October.
Right.
And there will be people from the institutes, and there will be a student from UCL, and the artist blogger Isabel Williams will be doing live drawing, and I will be doing a piece.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that probably wraps it up. We can just play out, I think, with a piece by Orlando, which we started with, which is Senate House.
Senate House, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you all very much for coming in. And,
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thousands of printed and electronic journals. A short walk from hotels.